something I try to focus on daily now is just really, really sitting in the water with what I'm working on creatively and letting it come to me as opposed to trying to like force something out.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. Twice a week, we will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Jewel Schroeder. Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Jewel Schroeder, tuning in today from Nederland, Colorado. Today's guest is joining us from Los Angeles, California. We have got Eden Malakuti Wilson in the house. Eden, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
Hey, I'm so ready. Let's go.
Yeah. So I met this amazing woman when we were both in Israel last August. We both were on this reality music trip with the Shusterman Foundation and like 40 other amazing artists and music industry people. And we literally had like one lunch, I think, over some hummus and other amazing Israeli salads. And then she told me what she did. And I was like, wow, we have got to do this podcast. And so here we are much, much later making it happen. And for those of you that don't know Eden, she goes by Eden XO, and she's a singer, songwriter, pop cultural polymath, and really has, you know, worked with a lot of big artists, you know, and past collaborators like Kygo, Kelly Clarkson, Little John, Pitbull, so many different others. And I also know that you were on tour with Britney Spears as an opening act along Nicki Minaj all through North America. And then you've, you know, obviously performed with a lot of other people like Skrillex, Avicii, Cascade, and several others. Beyond all of those amazing things, I love how you really blend your art together. And I know, you and your husband as well, Ryan Wilson, who's a great street artist. Just the way that you move through life is definitely unconventional, like, you know, having a lot of, you know, record deals and things like that, but then choosing to really, you know, be and honor your own path. And so with that, Eden, welcome to the show. Fill in any gaps that I might have left out and give us a glimpse of your personal life.
Oh my gosh. No, that like actually just made me smile so big. Like you just made me feel so cool when I've been having a day where I'm like kind of being hard on myself. So that was awesome. Thank you, Jules. No, girl, when we met in Israel, that was the first, like I have to be totally honest, like obviously the trip was so transformative, but like you and I had that lunch you mentioned on day one. And I think we had all just got off the plane, the very long journey from all different parts of the globe. I remember like we hadn't even gone back to a hotel yet to shower or anything. We just went straight to that church and then we had the lunch. And I was like a little bit questioning what the hell I was doing there. I was
kind of like, we both were.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, okay, what did I sign up for? What am I doing? And then I'm so happy that we sat next to each other. It was like magnetic. And I just was like, yes, this girl is fire. I adore her personality. She's got like such a shining brilliance about her. And then like we went kind of deep over like you said, hummus and couscous. And I was like, wow, like, okay, I'm in the right place. Like you actually like quickly like flipped my mindset about the whole thing. So that was really awesome. Yeah. And I wish we were in the same cohort and got to see more of each other. Oh. But we still have this like bond by being there together. And I'm so glad that we're doing this now. Thank you for having me. Your podcast is rad and I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know you've had such an interesting background yourself, you know, with growing up and your father being just like from a cultural perspective, Iranian, and then your mother white. And I know that was a whole thing like when we were at the airport as well. But that's like a whole nother story for those that haven't traveled into Israel in and out. It can definitely be intense to say the least. But I'm curious, you know, for you, did you always feel like art and performance was a North Star for you? Or if we were a fly on the wall in the life of Eden growing up, like what would have been some of the snapshots we would have seen, you know, along the way, or some of the turning point moments that we would have seen? So our listeners get a sense of like you and kind of just, you know, what Eden's life looks like.
Specifically like starting with growing up?
It could be whatever comes to mind. Like, it could be young, it could be, you know, like, you know, career-wise, it could be both and, so.
When I was a little kid, I always had an interest in performing and creativity, whether it was, like, writing short stories or playing piano or, you know, being in school plays. I really enjoyed expressing myself that way and stepping into the shoes of, you know, I guess, quote unquote, another character, another version of myself, another layer of myself. And my house was like kind of a tumultuous, turbulent house, which I'm not shy about and I have spoken about before. A little bit of, I guess, just like some typical kind of like domestic violence disturbances going on. Mm-hmm. And so I was really coping, I think, with some of my trauma through like creating. And I just remember I had like notebooks and like I used to just lay on my floor and just, you know, write lyrics before I even knew that they were lyrics. I would just write these poems and then I had this like boombox where I could record myself, and I used to pretend I had my own talk show. Like, I don't know what I was doing, but I would just talk to myself and then create all these different characters for like straight up hours, just laying there like talking into the tape recorder, setting on the boombox and just things like that. And I will say, like, in the Persian culture, you know, art and music and literature and poetry, all of those things, if you go back in history, are very, very important to the culture. And so it's kind of is in my blood. My dad plays harmonica and would write poetry, and he does have this like totally other, like really sensitive side to him. And so music was kind of always in my house. And I guess I sort of used the writing aspect of it as a way to kind of escape. And that was my like gateway drug into wanting mm-hmm. to be in entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think, like, you know, just if you imagine growing up, even like the creating of a character, and even for myself at times, it's like when I either step on stage or when I'm writing something, in some ways it allows me to, like, I don't know if escape's the right word, but transform, or it's like, it's just a whole nother world.
Yeah.
And I'm curious for you in that process, do you still find yourself doing that, you know, whether, like, you know, we mentioned, you know, being on tour with, you know, Britney, and I know you've done a lot of other huge, you know, you've headlined Pride Festival and all these other different things many, many times. And so do you still find yourself doing that? And then just for those that are listening, like, anything that you could offer just kind of in the value of what, you know, that makes available, like, you know, creating characters and just the value you've seen in yourself in doing that.
Well, I love the word you used, which is transform. I think that that's a really, it's very telling in a great way, because I really do believe that there is a real difference between performance and transformance. And you can tell. You can tell when someone's, quote, performing and trying to be, as opposed to stepping into the shoes of, let's say, a role in a film, right? Or really diving into a personal song. Instead of trying to show off, you know, trying to express and trying to embody, I think that that's so, so important. And only something I've, honestly, after like years and years and years of, being in entertainment, you know, I've actually, just to back it up a little bit, I've never had a normal job, which is good and bad, because I got my first record deal at 16. I never really actually never had that experience of like waiting tables or working at a cafe or any of that, which I sometimes like really wish maybe I had, but I've been doing this, you know, a long, long time. And I've only in the last couple of years kind of figured that out. And so it's so nice to hear you say that as a fellow artist, that it really is about transforming. It really is about having empathy for, you know, a character, quote unquote, or a story in a song or whatever it is. Like, it's about really like sitting in the water, going deep and like being, as opposed to like, you know, posing as something. So I guess that would be my first piece of advice is like, and it took me so long. And so sometimes I look back on like some kind of like false starts and failed attempts and maybe some songs that didn't do what I thought they were going to do. And it might be because it wasn't fully coming from that place, you know, and maybe I was almost there, but it's something I try to focus on daily now, is just really, really sitting in the water with what I'm working on creatively and letting it come to me as opposed to trying to like force something out. I hope that makes sense.
It's such a humbling planet, waiting in the water and just, you know, allowing it. And I think, you know, especially a lot of our culture is like, we want it now, or we want it, you know, done yesterday kind of thing. And it's like, push, hustle, move. And I think, you know, this art, not even art in general, but I find some of the best things happen when you allow it to come. And, you know, I'm curious for you on the other side, you put a lot of pressure on yourself, because I imagine, like you said, you had your first record deal at 16. And then also just give some of our audience some more context too of like what then happens. I know there's quite a few record deals that came after that as well. But if this is like, you know, your job, someone, for someone that's listening to this being like, wow, like, how does she stay creative all the time? Or like, how does like there would that be a lot of pressure? And so I can imagine that might be some of the questions. And I'm just curious, like, your relationship to those pieces.
Yeah. Well, okay. So it's the first part of your question. So I emancipated myself around like 15 and a half. And at 16, I moved to LA, and I grew up like about 60 miles east of LA, but it might as well have been like a totally different world. I mean, there's Hollywood is Hollywood, and there's no other place like it. So it was really like stepping into, I guess, Oz. And I didn't know anybody, I didn't have any connections or anything. And I just kind of knew, like, I'm going to go to LA and I'm going to make it and I'm going to have a story to tell. And it's that very cliche, like, thing that, you know, we see in the movies with wide-eyed girl comes to Hollywood and makes it big. You know, I really thought, yeah, but it actually did happen pretty quickly. Just before I turned 17, I got a record deal with Epic Records with my first band that I had started. And we were like playing out in LA and getting some buzz. We were like an all-girl pop punk band called Shut Up Stella. And it was crazy. It was kind of the end of the era of big advances and big budgets. This was like 2007, right before the economy was going to crash. And so we got, you know, like a huge, huge record deal. And then all of a sudden we were being flown all around the world to work with different producers. And I was finding myself in these like major recording studios and, you know, going to the Grammys that year and standing next to John Mayer and the things that were just like, let me correct myself. Sorry, not Grammys, Grammy party. I actually didn't go to the awards, but I went to the party and I was like, wow, I'm standing next to John Mayer and like, you know, this is crazy. And, and then it all kind of came crashing down. I mean, it's a long, story, but basically we got dropped. Pretty much the music industry is really, really fickle, and there's a lot of turnover and there's a lot of politics within the building. So the person who signed us was the president of Epic at that time, and then in the middle of our record he left to go run Island, which is another label. And so we were stuck in a contract where nobody kind of wanted us and felt there was no champion, you know, behind our band. And to be completely honest, like, we weren't that good. Like, we really weren't. I think a lot of it was novelty of like, oh, there's these three girls like playing instruments and writing their own songs. I think that side of it was refreshing because a lot of young girls were not really writing their own songs yet. But, you know, we had a long way to go. And I certainly had a long way to go. So we were dropped, and I really wasn't deterred. I mean, I remember crying and But I never thought, like, okay, this is the end. I just kind of was like, okay, what's next, you know? And so, yeah, as you kind of touched on, I then got another record deal a couple years later, I think like a year after that. And it brought me to the UK. And I really, like, honed my craft as a songwriter over there. And I was working with just some really awesome songwriters, some British acts that your listeners may or may not know, like the Pet Shop Boys and Johnny Marr from the Smiths, who, like, the Smiths are everything to me. So that was pretty cool. And I was kind of part of this, like, pop factory over there that was working on this girl group called Girls Aloud's album. They were almost like the modern Spice Girls or something. I kind of was signed to this sort of like pop dictator who every day, like, in a good way, would crack the whip and have all of like the young talent there come up with like 20 ideas to one instrumental track. And so I had to learn to write melody really, really fast. Because it was a crazy place. It would be like, Kylie Minogue's coming in and we need 20 hooks. And I'd be like, okay, I'm up for the challenge, you know? And so those years were sort of more spent as a songwriter. But a lot of surreal, crazy stuff happened then too. Like, I remember Simon Fuller, who created like X Factor, and you guys can like Google away who he is. He's a really big deal. He landed his helicopter like on the grass of the English studio and like took a meeting with all of us, which was like insane to me. I was just like, this is insane, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that was like a really important time. And then I'll try to speed this up, but basically around that time Lady Gaga was exploding. Part of why I went to the UK was because I loved dance music and I wanted to make more kind of dancier music than I had been making with my punk band, and nobody in America really wanted to do that with me. So I went there, and then Gaga had just exploded, and so I was like, I gotta go back to LA and try to do this again. Oh my gosh, I'm boring myself with how long this story is, but I'll get to the point. Just because I've told it so many times, you know, I'm like, ugh. But so I came back and I started a group. Yeah, I'm sorry, Jules. Cut me off if it gets boring. But I came back. I started a group called Jesse and the Toy Boys, which was kind of meant to be like Gem and the Hologram. So Eden's my middle name, and I wasn't going by Eden yet at that time. I started playing clubs. And then, yeah, Britney Spears took me on the road, which I thought, okay, this is going to be it. This will be the big moment. You know, this is the big break. And it really was in a lot of ways. Like, all of a sudden, I was just, like, performing in arenas with the queen of pop, arguably. And, you know, I gained a lot of fans. And streaming wasn't really happening yet, though. So it was kind of hard to equate if it was really clicking or not. Mm-hmm. And I had been kind of so burned by the major label system that I was doing all of this independent of a record label. And eventually it just kind of broke down because I was doing this tour and I was killing it and getting great reviews and feeling the electricity in the room. And, you know, after shows, like, I remember it was so surreal because Nicki Minaj was the other support act on the tour. And she came up to me and she was like, girl, you are slaying it. And I just remember that moment being like, oh my gosh, you know, but then I was trying to stay afloat by paying for my own bus. The way I'd pay for the bus is I would leave the arena, play a club show. And then that money would go directly back into like paying for the bus, paying for the driver, paying for my dancers, paying for my makeup artist. And so I kind of came home from the tour like broke, like everything had been spent in a good way to sort of like keep me going. But at that point, I think in hindsight, I really should have probably signed a deal with a major at that time to lift some of the like financial burden. But yeah, you know, it was, I guess it wasn't meant to be. And so sort of when the dust settled, I came home and I was like, wow, I just saw the world and I'm going to be evicted because I cannot pay my rent. So that was wild. And then I signed another record deal. I promise the story's almost over. I signed another record deal, and that was to Virgin Records. And at this point now, this is like 2013, you know, like a year and a half had passed since the tour. And I remember the label saying, like, you know, yeah, well, you know, everything you had built with Jussie and the Toy Boys is kind of old news. We need you to rebrand. And that was sort of shocking to me because I was like, old news, you know, it's been a hot second, but that is kind of the way things move in pop. Especially it's like fresher, younger, you know, and by the way, I think that that's a broken system. That's something I could speak to later, but I just was living kind of in fear at that time. And so I said, okay, but I wanted to make sure that whatever I rebranded as was at least a little bit like a piece of me. And so that's when I decided to go by Eden, which is my middle name at birth. And it really felt like a rebirth. Which was great. And then I had released my very first single on a major label in 2014 and it went top 40. And that was a like lifetime goal of mine to achieve. And then once again in 2015, the president of the label got fired. And once again, I was dropped. And so, you know, I don't know if I'll do another deal, but things are changing. And I've luckily been able to support myself in other creative ways. But I just have learned so, so much from all of that and started my own independent label and have had some success with those releases. And, you know, you can't do it for those reasons. You can't do it to try to get rich or be famous. You know, none of those things ever work out. It has to be because you love creating and you can't imagine yourself doing anything else. And so that's been like a blessing and a curse. It's just like, I don't know how to do anything else and I don't love anything else this much. So I guess we'll just keep going until something either sparks in a big way or until I'm dead.
I love that, Eden. Unless something sparks in a big way until I'm dead. And you know, one thing too about your story that, you know, I loved hearing when we were in Israel and even just listeners that are hearing right now, you know, just the word resilient comes to mind.
Oh, thank you.
And not only that, but like you have so much tenacity. Like here you're right, you know, like with Britney Spears, I've had the top 40 track. Like you've had these mile markers that some people in their career would just like dream for. And then at the end of the day, like there's just life that happens. And one thing I like about you is that those moments don't define you. Like, yeah, they've been really great to accomplish, I imagine, but that there's so much more to who you are. And I just love your dedication to the craft. And it's like, this is just who I am and what I do because it brings me joy. And yeah, like it's great when these things, you know, these like big moments and these peak things happen. But at the end of the day, you're not defined by them in the sense that you're still here. You're still human. You're still like making it. And I just am curious for you to touch on that because I think so many people get so caught up in their goals, right? Whether it's entrepreneurship, whether it's art, whether it's like, you know, politics or whatever it might be, but to actually just recognize like you're not defined by the success that you so desperately are driving for. And so any advice you could give and what you've learned throughout this like whole journey, just in terms of like how to stay true to yourself, but ultimately like, I mean, it kind of is like, how do you keep it real when like shit goes like wrong or when it doesn't go the way that you want it to, and how to just like keep going? And I just think staying true to yourself is such a big, big theme that I think often can get missed sometimes. So just curious if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's a big one. Finding strength in your own vulnerability is really important. Again, a new lesson I'm learning, practicing, implementing. For specifically with the entertainment world, so much of it is fake it till you make it. For me, you know, let's say I went to a party and I had just gotten dropped and I know everyone knows it, but people are like, oh, hey, how are you? And the sort of like impulse reaction is to be like, hey, I'm doing so great. How are you? You know, what's up with you? And I did that for a while. I sort of masked a lot of my vulnerability because I wanted to just pretend like it was all good. I think there's just been a shift culturally in the last couple of years. It's been really, really nice with just everything with women's movement and just culturally, hopefully things continue to change in that way. But I'm just saying, you know what? Hey, I'm not doing so great. I'm kind of depressed. I'm going through X, Y, and Z. And through that empathy, because empathy is at the core of art, you know, and it's the heart of making art. And so just starting to find a community and find a tribe that I didn't have for so long. I was such a lone ranger for a really long time, because that's the way that the patriarchy in the music business sets you up to be as a female pop star. It's like there's only room for one, blonde pop star on our label right now. And so you better not be friends with the other artists that are signed here because blah, 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 right? And it's that whole way in the town. And once I kind of realized that that's bullshit, for lack of a better word, and started kind of befriending fellow artists who had a similar story to mine and experience, I found a lot of strength within that community to rely on, like my sisters who really understood what it felt like. And that really helped me find that spark to want to keep creating. One person who comes to mind is a collaborator of mine who's one of my best friends now, and her name's Bonnie McKee. And she's, for those of you who don't know, she's an amazing songwriter. She wrote Teenage Dream and a million hits. And we used to be like fierce kind of frenemies, enemies, and very competitive with each other. And one day we were just sort of like, this is stupid. Like, let's come together and try to write a song. And I'm so glad we did because we've had tons of success together now. And I guess just sharing in our vulnerability together and not faking it, that almost just gave me like a second wind to be able to continue to create. And not only create, but to start creating from a real vulnerable, authentic place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love you touching on that. And I do think, I've seen it too in the last few years. It's why, podcasts like this, where we actually, it's like, cool, you've done all this great stuff in the world, but, how is it when you go to bed at night? And, what really goes on, behind the scenes? And actually having vulnerability lead the way, I think, has not only become a huge shift, but for so many of us, a requirement of, if I can't feel you and I don't, it doesn't seem congruent, I find, and I'm curious if this has been true for you too, but, people. People, aren't as interested. It actually, people tend to lean out because there's so much being thrown at us, at so many different times. And I know you and I could chat for forever. And I want to start to wrap up here with just the last question for you, and then we're going to jump into our rapid fire round. But for those that are tuning into this, that are artists or emerging artists, or really want to get themselves, out there. In the world today, and more just starting out, if you look back at your plethora of what's been true before and what's true now, what advice would you give them? Should they go with their record label? Should they not go with their record label? Any little tips and things that if someone could have given you the golden book that maybe you've learned that you might pass along. And I know it's not one size fits all, but just if you've got your little short list of advice tips.
Okay, I definitely want to answer that, but you just sparked something in me that I want to share that are not my words, but actually this could sort of answer that question in a way too. There's a book, and I don't know if you've read it. It's called Letters to a Young Poet, and it's by Rainer Maria Rilke, and it's amazing. And I just got up from my little poof that I'm sitting on looking out my window, and I grabbed it as you were speaking because I have to share this with you. So it's an amazing book. You can get it on Amazon for $3. In letter eight, Rilke just writes this short little thing that I just feels like I should share this with you and with the listeners. Rilke says, "Please ask yourself whether these large sadnesses haven't rather gone right through you. Perhaps many things inside you have been transformed, Perhaps somewhere, someplace deep inside your being, you have undergone important changes while you were sad. And there's one other section I want to continue with. Rilke says, if it were possible for us to see farther than our knowledge reaches, and even a little beyond, the outworks of our presentment, perhaps we would bear our sadnesses with greater trust than we have in our joys. For they are the moments when something new has entered us, something unknown. I guess the advice I would give is just to really take those times of defeat, times of rejection, because look, anybody who wants to get into this, you're going to hear no 90 million times. Like 99.999% of the time you're going to hear no. And it's going to crush you. And so just allow it to crush you. I think what I would tell myself looking back is just reiterating what I said before. I wouldn't mask it. I wouldn't numb it. I wouldn't drink a glass of wine or smoke a joint or take a Klonopin and try to go to sleep. I would sit in those feelings. That's what I would do differently. I would sit in those feelings and I would get a pen and I would sit at the piano and I would just start seeing what that transforms and like looks like creatively, instead of trying to sort of like numb it away and fake it till you make it away. I just don't think that serves you in any way as an artist. And that's the biggest mistake I think I made. And again, I don't have regrets, but I remember like the label choosing, you know, what the single was going to be. And don't get me wrong, I think my song Too Cool to Dance is awesome. Everybody go download it. But I had other songs that were so much deeper and so much more meaningful to me. And I was afraid to speak up and say, hey, like maybe I don't want to like be up there shaking my ass in like a leotard, and you know, maybe today I feel like actually, you know, singing a ballad. And I didn't speak up, and I masked a lot. I masked a lot, and I allowed other people, particularly, you know, men, older men, to tell me what my art is supposed to look like, what it's supposed to sound like, what I'm supposed to be like. And that's the biggest piece of advice I can give, at least young women, is like, all of that is bullshit. You have to be authentic, and you have to do you, you know?
Yeah. So much goodness. Eden, I've had goosebumps the last few minutes even talking, and like that wisdom too, it's just like, it's such the truth of it. You know, it's like feeling what there is to feel and like sitting in that, and also being like, you know, screw that or whatever it is. Like, this is me unapologetically. And yeah, I love all the things that you're doing. And I know you've got like so many good things in the works. I know you've got a TV show, you've got, you know, so many more songs, all these things that are happening. So we'll have to have you on for a follow-up at some point in the future. But for now, let's jump into the rapid fire round. So we're going to close it out here with 5 lightning questions coming at you. Are you ready?
Okay. Oh my gosh. I'm always so slow at these. I'll try.
Okay. Question number 1, fill in the blank. If you really knew me, you would know what?
Oh my gosh, see how slow I am. If you really knew me, you would know I'm a goofball.
I would attest to that. I think back to walking through some markets in some of your fabulous outfits. And yeah, in Israel. Question number 2, what is one practice that you do regularly that you feel sets you up for success?
I try to, I guess it's a form of meditation in a way. In the morning, I try to do my creator mind work, and I try to do it outside. I think it's important to be in the sunlight and get a little vitamin B going, and whatever I'm trying to create that day, I try to sit there and visualize it without being on my cell phone. I think that like cell phones are kind of hell phones. And when I noticed that when I detach myself from the phone first thing in the morning and I start out in nature instead, I have a much, much better day and a higher success rate that day, as opposed to when I started off answering emails.
Yeah. Love that. So, so true for me as well. Next question. What is one food that you really, really enjoy having?
My comfort food is Persian food, and the specific dish, my favorite dish, is called Fesanjoon, and it's like this pomegranate walnut, like almost like sweet and sour puree over basmati rice. That's my jam.
I have not had that, and it sounds amazing. I love that.
Oh, I'll make it for you. Yes. I actually know how to make it. I'll make it for you.
I'm coming to LA soon. Yeah. I'll tell you more about that offline.
I want to come see you because it's a goal of mine to learn how to ski. I don't know how to ski, and I would love to learn how to ski and like come hang out with you. But I feel like I'd be like on the bunny, like beginner slope, and you'd be like, okay, bye.
Well, listeners, if you knew me, you know, I used to ski when I was younger, and now I've been a big snowboarder. So I haven't skied probably in 10 years. So actually, if I started again, I think we would be like in good company and I could show you some things.
Okay.
So it'd be fun.
Oh my gosh, please. Please.
Yeah. Upcoming attractions. Last question for you is, what does living the unconventional life mean to you?
Happiness. It means happiness. It's, you know, there's nothing that brings me more joy than like freedom. I really don't like feeling trapped, and I kind of mentioned it earlier, like I've never had a regular job. That's not to say there's anything wrong with that, but, you know, this unconventional path, I guess, that I've gone down, even in the darkest times, I've been so thankful that I get to like do what I love and create, and I know that it's such a blessing to be afforded that time to get to do that. And I'm really, really grateful to be blessed in that way. And so I guess my unconventional life is like happiness. Like I don't want a conventional life. And actually, to touch on one last thing, you know, especially having like a Middle Eastern father, and we're super cool now, you know, I think he finally gets what I do, but, the pressure there to like, you know, be a lawyer, be a doctor, or have children right away, you know, get married. It's really, really ingrained in the culture, and for women especially. And I really rebelled against that. And I'm so glad I did. And I wouldn't change anything, even though I don't feel like I'm where I want to be yet. It's okay, because I'm really, really joyful in the place that I am today.
Yeah. So good. I love it. Eden, tell everyone who would like to tune into your music, follow along on your journey, learn more about what you're up to. What's the best place for them to get in touch?
Oh, thanks, girl. Okay, yeah. Follow me on Instagram. It's at Eden. That's it. Just E-D-E-N. And then Twitter as well, at EdenXO. I don't really go on any other apps, so don't worry about those, but you can check out, I released an EP last summer called The Question. It's available on vinyl and on all digital streaming platforms, and I have new music coming very soon, so just keep in touch with me on Spotify, Apple Music, all of that. And also, you can tune in to Beats One on Apple Music, where I host the Beats One List show Wednesdays and Thursdays on Apple Music. So there's all kinds of ways to get in touch with me, and I'd love to whoever's listening, you know, send me a DM, whatever. I love to write people back and stay in touch and talk to people. And especially if you're listening to Jules, I know you're a rad person, so let's connect.
Yeah, thanks for that, Eden. Unconventional Lifers, you can head over to unconventionallifeshow.com. We will put all of that in the show notes on the blog. And yeah, Eden is just magical. And as someone who's, you know, been tuning into your music, seeing some of your Instagram stuff. Like, you are just, you know, an infinite well of amazing, abundant creativity. So listeners, go check her out. Ian, thanks so much for chatting with us on air today. I'm glad we finally made it happen, and just, yeah, really excited for all that's happening in your world, and it's great listening to your story and hearing your advice today.
Oh my gosh, my pleasure. And congrats on your album that's coming soon. I'm very, very excited to hear it.
Yeah, I know, listeners. I've got a lot of songs that are about to start releasing, so stay tuned for that. And we will have more amazing content coming at you soon. So thanks, Unconventional Life. Thanks, Eden.